It's time for the all-new Gervie's Law, cross-examining the ages, with your host, Alan Gervie, and introducing your co-host, Michelle Lobato. Alan is the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 40 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Hi, I am Alan Gervie, and this is Gervie's Law. And of course, as usual, I'm here with my co-host, Michelle Lobato.
Hello, everyone.
I know you're excited for this show, Michelle, because you are one of the biggest sports fans who I've ever seen.
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
Runs deep. Mm-hmm.
We talked about who we were going to have on the show, and I said the greatest figure skater
Scott Hamilton.
No, you said Alan Rosenberg.
No, I said Scott Hamilton.
The greatest figure skater of all time.
We were talking about the Olympics, and I got confused.
And Scott Hamilton will be next week on the show, which we're excited for. But right now, we're going to focus on someone who may have grown up with some snow around and maybe even skated a little bit in Michigan, but as far as being Scott Hamilton, he is not. Alan Rosenberg, we could call him Mr. Soccer. If Scott Hamilton is Mr. Figure Skating, Alan Rosenberg is Mr. Soccer in the United States, president of the U.S. Soccer during the 1990s and oversaw the 1994 FIFA World Cup, which was a huge event and really gave soccer the big bounce that we're going to talk about. And, of course, the 1999 Women's World Cup in the United States. And I will tell you, that was one of the most exciting events that I'd ever seen. And I still envision it today, watching, the China-U.S. and seeing Brandi Chastain taking her top off. Did you know she did that?
I did not know that. That was before I was born.
Okay.
That sounds very intriguing.
She had a sports bra on when they won on the extra kick. So that was really exciting. We're going to ask Alan maybe about that. He's co-founder of MLS. What is MLS, Michelle?
The Major League Soccer.
Amazing. And he had his name on the trophy. Have you ever had your name on a trophy?
No, that's super cool. How'd you manage that?
We haven't gotten to him. You haven't introduced him yet. He's got some more accolades. We'll do that quickly.
Yes.
He was inducted into the U.S. National Soccer Hall of Fame in 2007 as a builder. He was the director of the 1994 World Cup, as I mentioned, chairman of the organizing committee. And he worked as a lawyer, and this is something that I'm intrigued by, with Jack Kent Cook. You don't know who Jack Kent Cook is. Well, we're going to hear about that. He was the owner of several sports teams, including the Lakers, the Kings, and the Clippers,
Whoa.
And the Aztecs.
Whoa.
You remember the Aztecs?
Ooh.
No, I didn't think so. There, but you have heard of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Magic Johnson, haven't you?
Yes.
Okay. Well, he helped in acquiring them for the Lakers, so
nice.
That's something. The accolades go even further, founding First Century Bank and First Los Angeles Bank, both of which were later sold. Alan Rosenberg, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Happy to be here.
You know, I'll tell you about another Alan who's been on the show several times. And when I've done his introductions, Alan Dershowitz would say to me, I'm going to tape record the show and I'm going to play it every morning with your introduction so that I can get pumped up to face my day.
I'll do the same if you'll give it to me. Thank you.
And Alan Dershowitz spells Alan the same way as we do. So after all this, when you look back, and it's been a long career of success and obviously building soccer to what it is in the United States, what do you feel most proud of throughout the history of your work here coming from Michigan into California?
When I look back, it's not one specific individual activity or game or anything else. It's more kind of my lifetime of achievement. And we're talking about soccer. Looking back from where it was when I became president of the Soccer Federation in 1990 to where it is today, and it's obviously absolutely night and day. I got a couple of great examples for you. When I took over, the U.S. Soccer Federation was located in a trailer
In
Colorado Springs because the Olympic Committee gave them free rent. They had maybe six or eight employees, something like
that. That's it.
This spring, They're going to open up a $50 million facility in Atlanta, not only headquarters, but 8 training fields. So that was then. This is now. I'll give you another example. The World Cup in 1990 was in Italy. Mm-hmm. It was not carried live in English language in the United States.
Really?
We had a Saturday last year where every single MLS game was on Apple. Every single NWSL game was on CBS. We showed the European Champions League and the CONCACAF Gold Cup. So from zero to, you know, an awfully crowded one-day schedule. So we've come a long ways.
It's incredible. When you put yourself back at that time, did you have that kind of vision, or you want just someone who just wanted to do the best you could at that time, or could you see it? I know you've talked about, you know, expanding to some of the bigger venues. That was what you contributed or one of the contributions for the World Cup. But how could you ever imagine that it would have grown this big?
I really didn't. I wish I could say I was this great visionary and put it all together and it fell into place exactly as I had planned. Not true. Because I had been involved in the 84 Olympics, first of all, I realized what a impact a big sporting event can have. And because I was the soccer commissioner in 84, I went to my first World Cup in Spain and got really the understanding of how amazing and how big the World Cup is. And so when the opportunity was presented to me by FIFA to take over the World Cup, I realized we had a challenge because there probably weren't enough Americans to support a soccer event, but Americans love a big event. And so we were shameless in the kind of promotion we did. We brought in celebrities.
Yeah, there was Robin Williams.
Robin Williams
Diana
in the
Ross,
final draw.
Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah, you name it. And we probably have 20 others that anytime we had any opportunity, we made a big deal out of it.
How did you get these people on board? You know, Robin Williams, at the time, he was probably doing Mork from Ork or something. Yeah,
well, the good thing is a lot of them were soccer fans. And so Robin Williams, for example, I'm sure we paid him something, but it wasn't some humongous fee.
Right.
So some of them we paid an appearance fee. We went to their agents and got them. A lot of them, it became a thing to do for the celebrities. You know, we just saw it at the Super Bowl, all the celebrities that show up because it's a big deal. So once we got some momentum, a lot of the celebrities were happy to do it. In some cases, just for their own publicity, and in some cases, they were part of one of the host cities, and so they were sort of doing it in support of the host city activity. So we paid money, but we also got some that were at scale, if you will. I tell you one story that's quite amazing, and again, would tell you the difference between FIFA then in the World Cup and FIFA now. Whitney Houston was the biggest star at that time.
Michelle, do you know who Whitney Houston is?
Of course.
Okay, good.
Yes.
So we paid her asking price. It was very big.
Yeah.
To do a halftime show. And we envisioned a Super Bowl-type halftime show. And FIFA said, we can't do that. We can't, you know, put a stage out at midfield. It might destroy the field.
The field, right.
And what if there's precipitation and it's muddy? We showed him statistics that on July 17th, there had never been measurable humidity in Pasadena, Rose Bowl,
right,
in history. That wasn't enough. We actually, it was the Michael Jordan halftime show at the Rose Bowl. We brought the top person from FIFA out and said, okay, watch the show. They're going to take the stage off and go out there and you tell me if there's a blade of grass that's been destroyed.
Wow.
And there wasn't. But FIFA was adamant, so we had Whitney Houston, after paying all that money, stuck on the sidelines doing a halftime show.
You know,
FIFA has announced for this 2026, they're going to have a regular halftime show.
And I'll tell you, because I know you, I saw you on Radio Row at the Super Bowl a couple weeks ago, and when we talk about Bad Bunny, who was the halftime performer, you have more people, especially younger people, probably talking about the Bad Bunny halftime show than the Super Bowl game itself.
Yes, and the TV ratings were higher for the halftime show.
Right. But, you know, given what the game was, that's not saying much. But when they see that, you made such a big event for World Cup. Are we going to see that this time around?
Absolutely. First of all, it's, you know, more than doubled. Well, it's doubled in size. So there's going to be more teams, more matches.
48 teams.
Yes. And we had 24. And it's they created a lottery for tickets, and you know it's impossible to get a ticket.
Are you going to be able to get some tickets?
I hope so.
Those ticket prices are insane.
Well, the ticket
the resale ticket prices.
Well, even the it's underlying crazy. Price.
And people are upset about it. Did you go to a Taylor Swift concert?
I did, and I overpaid. How much did you pay? Like $1,000 for the worst seat ever.
Okay, so
I went too, but I went in Toronto because it was a little less expensive. Yeah. Actually, we flew to Vienna for the Taylor Swift concert, and then it was canceled because of the terrorist threat, and then we went to Toronto to see it. So we get your point.
What's so enraging is usually the idea is that it's a lot of bots buying up these tickets, right, and then reselling them. Or is there a way to avoid that?
I can't, you know, I can't keep up with technology. So I'm not saying there's no bots out there, but they have pretty tight ticket control, you know, in terms of names on the ticket and everything else. So, and FIFA is running the aftermarket, and so they can keep a little more control than is normal. But again, as I say,
so there's a lottery system.
Yes. excuse me. So, the other thing that they've done to ameliorate what you're talking about, Michelle, every host city has to have a fan festival. And, you know, there's a nominal fee, a very nominal fee. And if you're a real fan, that's more fun than being in the stadium, frankly. You're going to be
the community.
Here did in they LA, have that in 94?
No, not. It was all pop-up stuff. So every local bar and everything. Here it's going to be the Florida Coliseum, and it's going to run for not the whole 39 days, but for about half of them. And as I say, if you're just a real fan, you know it's way more fun to be down there with everybody else and big screen. If you're in the stadium, you know it's comfy.
Yeah,
but half the time you're watching the big screen anyway. As I say, that sort of mitigates the issue about its out of reach for fans.
As a lawyer, though, you seem to have a lot of experience with the marketing part of it and promotion part. How did that come about? I do want to ask you about working with Jack Kent Cook, because he was known more of a showman. And, you know, he brought, I think, the Lakers to what they have become now. Is that something you picked up from your work as a lawyer with him?
Absolutely. I went to work for Jack Kent Cook when I was 27 years old, and I was his kind of right-hand man and general counsel.
How did you get the job?
Interesting. I had started my career here at O'Melveny & Myers.
Right.
Had left there and joined Chuck Manette and Tom Phelps in a firm, which ultimately
And you became a named partner of that
later,
firm.
Later, yes. And what happened... the lawyer that was the primary person representing Jack Kent Cook at O'Melveny gave me a call. He said that Mr. Cook is expanding. He's buying all these things, and he wants to have somebody in-house. That Cook had a deserved reputation of being very, very difficult to work for.
Yeah.
So I sat there and, said, you know, do I leave this firm I just joined and go out there and find out a year or two later? He chewed me up and spit me out. But I was a super sports fan, as you know. The other hand, I said, if I don't do it, I'll probably look back over my shoulder for the rest of my life and say, what if?
Yeah.
And so it worked out beautifully because I went and worked for him full time for a couple of years. And he was great. We had a great relationship. But I didn't like being a kept man. So I left and rejoined Chuck and Tom. And yes, the firm became Manette, Phelps & Rothenberg at that time. And something happened between Mr. Cook and O'Melveny, and both of the principals have died. Neither of them ever disclosed to me what it was, but he decided to replace O'Melveny, and he called me and basically installed me from the outside as a lawyer for him. He had a million lawyers, but I was pretty dominant, and I'd be both working for him and then through the years as a lawyer, I was particularly involved with the Lakers. I mean, he almost never went to a league meeting. I was the alternate governor. Wow. I was the alternate governor.
So how did you have something to do with Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar coming to the Lakers?
Well, we'll take him separately. And Kareem, he was approaching his final year with the Milwaukee Bucks.
Right.
At that time, there was no clear free agency rule in the NBA. And at that time, both the Lakers and the Knicks had some good assets that were tradable. He went to Milwaukee and said, look, I'm happy to stay this year, play my heart out, but you're going to end up at the end of the year with nothing. So if you could make a deal right now, I'd really like to see it done. And obviously in his situation, it would be the two cities that he would care about. So we started talking to Kareem, and we were making a lot of headway, but we didn't have the deal closed. We set up a meeting at the red carpet room in Denver because we didn't want to have, you know, rumors, and hopefully nobody would see us. So it's a different time. We didn't have a TSA then because we were making progress but couldn't close the deal. And the general manager, Pete Newell, and Cook's treasurer, Jim Locker, and I were supposed to go back to L.A. And at that time, the flight to L.A. was at the gate right next to the gate that was going to Chicago, which is where the Milwaukee president and general manager were going. I decided, heck with it. I said goodbye. I walked up to the other gate. I mean, you couldn't do that today.
Wow.
Okay. So now the funny part of the story is I had become very friendly with not related to this, but generally with the president of the Bucks, Bill Arverson, and Wayne Embry, who was the general manager. First African-American general manager in the NBA, maybe in any American sport. Anyway, I was close with him, and we were talking and kibitzing and, you know, having a drink or two, and we were getting ready to land. I literally got on my knees and said, guys, you know Cook. If I don't come back with something better than what we had when we left Denver, he won't even reimburse me for the flight, let alone pay me for my time. You got to give me something. And they laughed a lot and basically went to the bottom of their roster and say, yeah, we got Walt Wesley as a backup center who wasn't going to see a lot of action with Kareem there. And for old basketball fans, it'll be familiar, but for most not, an option for Jim Luskatov. His nickname was Jungle Jim Luskatov. And Red Auerbach from the Celtics used him to hatchet as the hatchet man on the other team's star. We never exercised the option. Wesley came, and he might have gotten 1 or 2 minutes a game.
People don't hear these stories. They don't know what goes into it. Quickly, in 30 seconds, Magic Johnson, and then I want to get on to your book.
Sure. Magic Johnson was, again, related to the uncertainty about this free agency. New Orleans was putting together what they thought was going to be a world-beating team. They signed Gail Goodrich.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to get compensation. And at that time, the deal was you worked it out with the other club. If not, then the commissioner would decide what to do. So we were in the league office, and we were negotiating back and forth. And part of the deal was a flip of draft choices. They thought they were going to be a world-beating team, and so they were going to be giving us a low draft choice. We knew we were in flux, and would have a higher draft choice. As it turned out, it didn't work out that way. We ended up with the first pick, as Cook was selling the bus.
Rest is history.
Absolutely.
And I think Bus probably wanted it after seeing the first pick.
Yes, it was very interesting. He was just a great showman, obviously.
Right.
The scouts for the Lakers measured five talents. Sidney Moncrief got exceeded Magic in three of those five. So if you went strictly by that, and Buss basically said, hey, wait a minute, he just won the NCAA, he's got a great smile, he's a winner.
And the rest is history.
Absolutely.
And he, of course, was a winner. So your book that just came out called The Big Bounce, The Surge That Shaped the Future of U.S. Soccer, rave reviews. This guy says it's a definitive account of the big bounce that propelled American soccer out of its Wild West past and into the international elite ranks, sharing little-known details of what really happened and why, from the radical to the farcical. Alexi Lawless, of course, the great American soccer player, wrote the foreword and described you as a visionary who looked around the corners to see the future of the sport in the U.S. The book is considered essential for understanding the history of soccer in America. What prompted you to write now what is considered the definitive book on U.S. soccer?
Well, we've talked about my work with the Lakers, and I did a lot of other work in the sports world. And for years, something would come up, and I'd tell some behind-the-scenes story. And people kept saying, you ought to write a book. You ought to write a book. And I, you know, I fiddled around, but it wasn't really making any progress. And then as we started getting closer to 2026, the conversation became, why don't you write a book about soccer? And I said, okay. So that's what propelled me.
Wow. And it's so timely with the World Cup. I think it's June 1st that the World Cup is starting. And everyone should read The Big Bounce in order to know where we've come as a country, U.S., in the big world of soccer.
Absolutely. Thank you for promoting my book. it's interesting because it isn't, you know, play-by-play of matches. Obviously, when they're certain pivotal matches that we refer to them, but it's more the how we did it, the behind the scenes, some funny stories, a lot of stories with elected, you know, a couple presidents. Our honorary chairman was Henry Kissinger. Lots of the celebrities, as we've already talked about, and so there's a lot of funny stories. There's a lot of, again, behind the scenes stories, and there also is the story of how we built. I mean, from scratch, basically. The Soccer Federation, the U.S. team, the World Cup.
And to what we're going to see in 2026.
Absolutely. And then the creation of Major League Soccer and then the 99 Women's World Cup.
You know, there's so much to talk about. We only have a few more minutes. I want to talk a little bit about the Olympics in L.A.
Sure.
Before I do, let's make sure everyone knows how they can get The Big Bounce.
It's available on Amazon, so
easiest way.
Easiest way. They started shipping on Tuesday.
Back in the day, that wasn't so simple. Let's talk in the last few minutes about the Olympics. Now, you've had such an impact, of course, on the 1984 Olympics. How do you see the 2028 Olympics in LA?
They're going to be great. There's no doubt about it. There's a huge difference between then and now. They've probably got more than double the sports, so it's way more comprehensive. People will realize that in 84, 70% of the spectators were from the area, from Southern California.
Right.
Globalization didn't exist then. It's going to be flipped this time around, so you're going to have so many more people from so many different countries, you know, which is great. But also it's somewhat of a challenge operationally.
LA be able to handle that? I have not seen as much building as I remember in the past.
Well, the great thing about LA in sports is we have all the facilities. One of the reasons that 84 was financially successful, whereas it basically bankrupted some of the prior host cities, was we didn't have to have a lot of capital expenditures.
Right.
And, you know, we've got state-of-the-art arenas, stadiums, hotels.
But we have an airport that sucks.
No.
And public transportation, that kind of sucks.
By 28, the airport is supposed to be done.
I know. Hopefully they've been working on it.
Yes.
What about the organization committee? Have you been involved or where are they at? And you know, I dare say Casey Wasserman's name. Where do you see that going in the future?
I think that, again, I'm not intimately involved, so I only can comment as an educated observer, if you will. And I think they're making the progress that they have to. I assume they're telling the truth when they say that they are ahead of plans in terms of sponsorship, which is the really biggest financial opportunity. So hopefully that's all true. Operationally, as I said, is a real bigger challenge because they have so many different venues. They've shipped out some of them.
Women's softball, unfortunately. My daughter's a big softball player, and I don't think we're going to Oklahoma to see the women's softball.
Well, it's not that long of a ride.
Not when there's so many other great events here in L.A.
Yes. The bank we sold to is based in Oklahoma City.
Oh, really?
So, yes.
Well, we've got to close it at that, and we're looking forward to the Olympics, to the World Cup in the summer. Hopefully, we can all get some access to tickets without paying through the nose. We're hoping that, and I know you have no control over it. The book is called The Big Bounce, The Surge That Shaped the Future of U.S. Soccer. He's Alan Rothenberg, the king of U.S. soccer. Alan, thanks for being with us here on Gervie's Law.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right. That'll do it for another episode. I think we have Scott Hamilton next week. Michelle?
I'm so looking forward to it.
Thanks for listening to Gervie's Law. See you next week.